Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 103. It only took us 103 episodes. This one, we're all, in theory, in 4K. So audio might be terrible, but high quality visuals. Today, we're talking OpenAI and what some people have been comparing to a circular economy. And then some big breakthroughs at the ARC Institute, not ARK, ARC. Brett, there's a meme going around showing OpenAI giving money to Oracle, giving money to NVIDIA, giving money back to OpenAI. Can you fill everyone in? Why is that going around? One, it's not 100% accurate, but that'll set us into the conversation.
Yeah, it's not accurate because OpenAI has a separate deal with Oracle to build some hundreds of billions of dollars of data centers out. And NVIDIA is going to sell OpenAI some chips to build out another on the order of $500 billion in data center. Along the way, they're also investing equity in OpenAI. So they're partly funding, you could say they're vendor financing, the company that's going to buy their chips along the way. So people are saying, well, this is kind of funny. NVIDIA is taking its balance sheet and giving it to somebody who then turns around and buys, you know, the meme is pays Oracle to buy NVIDIA chips. And so it does seem kind of circular. And I think that it is extraordinarily difficult to finance $500 billion in spend. And I think that, you know, given our expectation for, it's on the order of $3 to $4 trillion in AI compute spend in 2030, you're going to need to see a lot of money flow into this. And this is an indication of that.
Okay. So far, some comparisons being made online are to the dot-com bubble saying, right, this is circular. It doesn't make sense. There's no real customers here. I think that one's easier to debunk. Then there's a comparison, Brett, that you've made as well to the build out of the railroads in the US. And we'd love to dive into that. And one thing I've seen online and people talking about this is, you know, the reason that this is so different from previous massive build outs, whether it was telco or rail, is that at least so far, it has not been very debt driven, right? Like so far it's been social media cash flow driven, which is fundamentally different than debt financing. But that was a lot of talk. Take it
well,
where you
want. Yeah, I mean, right now, basically OpenAI and XAI have gone out and raised equity to invest in this compute. There's already some kind of like intermingling of, if you think about that, OpenAI is paying not for the underlying compute, but paying an infrastructure as a service provider like Microsoft for the incremental compute, means that they are already having somebody else buy the hardware and they're paying along the way. They're paying an installment plan for use of these GPUs. And so the entire industry is in some ways set up for a different kind of like class of customers to own the hardware and then to sell it back to the users of that hardware. So that's something that's already happened. You know, some of the neoclouds that are specifically catering to OpenAI and Anthropic, like CoreWeave, they are also borrowing money in order to buy the chip. So the AI foundation model company is playing on an installment plan for the GPUs, and the person who's buying the GPUs is also taking NVIDIA equity and also, you know, borrowing in the debt markets to some degree to build out the infrastructure. At some point, there's no doubt this is not going to end well. Like at some point, we're going to get over our skis. There's going to be maybe not too many GPUs out there, but too many GPUs in the wrong place, or too many GPUs that are owned by the wrong entity. And kind of there's going to be a restructuring of how this all happens. My read on where we are in the market is we're not there yet, as in like we have on the order of high hundreds of millions of active users of AI chatbots. I think it's going to go to 5 billion by 2028, 2029. And just cater right now, just catering, Nick disagrees, but just catering to those users, just catering to those users requires a huge amount of compute, just even if their use doesn't change. And what's happening instead is actually, you know, these things are beginning to work overnight on behalf of users. They're, you know, the GPU intensity of each incremental user is also increasing. And so the big contrast to me between the dot-com model and this is in the dot-com model, because it was all indirectly monetized, because it was all advertising monetized, it meant that people could put out inventory for free and say, hey, this is going to be valuable because we're going to be able to sell ads around it. Whereas at least the current setup of the AI industry right now is they are directly charging users for use of these chips. And at least insofar as been publicly reported on certainly OpenAI, they're doing so in a way that's, you know, not giving them away. It's gross profitable in how they're structuring their fees. And they're $200 a month users for these services. Okay, so people really like it.
So Brett, you're saying we're in like the second inning here.
Yes. Or yeah. Well, it depends on, I mean, how long the baseball game is going. But I think we're before the halfway point. I would say 1995 internet is where I'm at. And that's, Yahoo just accepted its first VC dollars. So there's a lot of like, you know, probably big entities that will make a lot of money off this that haven't even yet really been defined or breached into the public consciousness. And there are some, you know, and in 95, Cisco was around and they were promoting the internet mostly as a way to connect businesses together. And their stock had a, you know, 25X to go from there to the peak of .com. And the overall market went up, you know, on the order of 3X from 95 to the end of .com. And I think you actually have, you know, potentially more headroom because right now we're still focused on this language space and everything that's going on with knowledge workers. But these chips are not just going to be useful for that. They're, you know, OpenAI is going to try to push into robotics. Certainly Tesla will. I think that you'll need in the multiomic space, you need like a lot more. So I think this is early days of the build out.
All right, Nick, Mr. Chuckles. Why do you think it's you can talk through the chart you shared with me and
we'll get there, Sam. But okay. No, I mean my one question for you, Brett, is more, do you say on the 5 billion user number, is that specific to OpenAI? Because I've heard you say it somewhat specifically to OpenAI's user base, or are you talking about total chatbot usage?
No, this is total chatbot usage.
Okay.
But direct, not chatbot, like I'm going on Google search and they're feeding me an answer that I didn't even
know. Yeah, you're talking about Gemini.
Going to Gemini, yeah. Going to, you know, ChatGPT, going to Grok, yeah. Going to Claude, going to DeepSeek.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll get to 90% penetration, but I think that, you know... Taking the numbers we've seen from these companies now, as in going from zero to 500 million or 700 million weekly actives as OpenAI has done in the past few years, I think is a lot easier because you're building on, you know, the current internet base, and it really wasn't that much of a leap to use OpenAI intuitively compared to a Google search or some of the other applications it's started to disrupt. But then going from 700 to a few billion is a much harder logistical and, you know, distribution problem, partly because you have to begin to actively monetize these users in a way that is profitable, which I don't think at $20 a month with increasing usage, it will be. So you either have to embed indirect monetization in, you know, advertising, or, you know, look to take a take rate on shopping, or, you know, there has to be monetization in the back half of this growth that justifies the cost and expenditures that's going into AI. And I still think that is partly a big question for, you know, companies. And I think you'll look at a Gemini, which is now giving away, I think, Gemini Pro, or their pro tier to college students for a year free. And I think ChatGPT and OpenAI tried to do this, but it was only like a few month trial. And now it's just a discounted rate to the $20. And I think that is an underappreciated moat that these large incumbents have to keep costs artificially low as their core businesses just supplement. And the reason I bring that up is because it ties into what's happening right now, what we were just talking about with NVIDIA and OpenAI, right? You can't continue to fund the capital that OpenAI needs in the private markets. Like, the private markets are going to tap out. It seems like this was an indication that there might be there in a way that, you know, they haven't, you know, they've been able to justify, you know, billions of dollars in investment. But if you need hundreds of billions of dollars, which OpenAI is forecasting to.
Do you know how big the bond market is? I mean, like, I as in if you get into borrowing money, the equity market, equity issuance is such a sliver on bond issuance annually. So I think I do think that the AI foundation model companies are going to go public because they will need financing, and it's a way to get financing. It's also like a way to kind of like socially protect themselves against regulatory impulses that might otherwise constrain their ability to operate. And I think it's important that their public institutions are publicly held because of kind of like how important the technology is. And, you know, CoreWeave is, you know, effectively financing some of the build out partly through the bond market. And, you know, and so I think that you can borrow money against this stuff, and it will happen through other structures, through publicly investable vehicles like bond offerings, without the underlyings necessarily going public. And I think, you know, the scale of, I think there's going to be $10 trillion plus spent on AI software for kind of like knowledge work productivity advance by 2030. That's above our official forecast, but I think there's a lot of justification for that. The amount of compute that's required to support that is certainly on the order of trillions of dollars, call it $2 trillion worth of underlying chips and another $2 trillion worth of data center shells just to support that. And that's so big, you can't have... If people aren't paying for that, then that build won't happen, because Google, even with its balance sheet, can't afford to dump $2 trillion into data centers without like a business model attached.
No, but they can if they're...
They don't have $2 trillion. Have you looked at their balance sheet?
NVIDIA doesn't have $1 billion. They have $60 billion. So, yeah. You know, again, people are modeling this out on their own, you know, projected revenue that they're bringing in on their core businesses. And Google, and I think Meta, they're already showing that there's massive efficiency to their core business just by embedding the large language models and some of the innovations that they found into their existing advertising units. So that's right. A way that they can justify the continued spend without overcharging. And it's not, I'm not saying that they're not going to see, this is, I think, you know, getting into your $10 trillion figure, the difference is value created versus what you can actually charge to the end customer. And I think where we differ is, I believe these larger companies will keep what you can charge artificially lower than the value that's created, because
the value created in that example is $100 trillion in productivity advance for knowledge work, of which software gets to extract 10%. If you look at the way pricing is working right now for things that are more like human capital replacement, like sales agents, they're able to charge, you know, 70-80% of the value they displace. So like, we live in a world where, absent AI, on current trajectory, we would spend $10 trillion in incremental additional knowledge work wages over the course of the latter half of this decade. Like, as in, I'd be out there being like, I need to find $10 trillion worth of knowledge workers to pay for. My bet is that businesses are going to say, hey, I can give this tool to a knowledge worker and make them 10x the employee, this is by the end of the decade, and therefore I'm only going to pay 1/10 the cost of a knowledge worker in order to install it. That's aligned with kind of how OpenAI is charging for its tools right now. But the people who are building on top of that are trying to charge a lot more because they're trying to create their margin on top of it. So I am already assuming there's going to be a compression, a commodification down to kind of like to that 10% number. The reality, like the unit economics right now look much, much healthier than that. It would imply, you know, even more. But I think that kind of there is going to be a compression. And I'm not actually pre-calling that OpenAI is going to win it, though I think they have, you know, very good positioning here. Could be xAI, could be Gemini, could be whoever. But I do think that there's going to be like well-justified return on capital of like just throwing money at data centers. The world is starved for flops right now. Every time you are like ask ChatGPT to do something and you have to wait, that is a function of there aren't enough flops devoted to you. You know, every time kind of like the model times out because it's, you know, you're like, well, why did that happen? It's because their data center is filled up. And kind of the marginal stuff they're shipping is like, hey, let's have this thing think overnight for you. And let's have it kind of go out and do purchasing agent stuff. And so I think that this money is going to be very well spent for these companies. But it doesn't necessarily mean, like, it could mean like people get caught out along the way. It's like, I convinced the world that I need $50 billion worth of data center to do my thing. And so the world somehow gives me $50 billion. Then I build a $50 billion data center. And it turns out the thing I'm doing, which is, you know, generating stupid videos that suck people's brains out, is not something people are willing to pay for. Or I can attach indirect monetization for. And so then I go bankrupt. And then my building of $50 billion worth of GPUs is sitting there. It doesn't just sit there latent. Somebody else snaps it up for less money. Like, we'll go through that cycle. But I think that in aggregate, you'll be able to see, oh gosh, you know, this was a necessary build out that we need.
It is an interesting thing, especially another chart I've been seeing recently is the plateau and fall off of vibe coding. Have you seen that, Brett? It's like usage.
Oh, I haven't seen that. No. As in it's fallen off, as in utilization is falling off in vibe coding.
Yeah. I mean, I can see if I can pull up the exact chart, but it seems, and I think we've experienced it to some extent as well. It's like you can see the spark, but then to go from spark to fire is actually a big task that requires sustained effort that most people don't have. And it's like, we've seen that too. It's like, we saw that with, I don't know what report came out where it's like only 5% of these AI projects make it to production.
Yes, there was an MIT report that got a lot of headlines that was basically, the survey question was a little wonky. It was like, have you engaged in like a generative AI project? And then is it being used to either deliver cost reductions or deliver a product and service? So there's like, you could answer no to both of those and yes to the one. And that doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't doing something for you. But the headline was only 5% of them basically work. And I think that there's like, you can, or at least for this user, I can say I get a lot of productivity off of using ChatGPT. And I can say the degree to which I've tried to push and formalize and productize kind of things through APIs and stuff, it's definitely more mixed. Mm-hmm. And you're in a race as you try to go from like using ChatGPT to going into APIs, and I'm going to directly program against this stuff. In effect, you're in competition with OpenAI's development team suddenly, because they're trying to wrap it all together in a way that's useful for the general end user. So you have to have a very specific set of things, actions that you're trying to achieve to deliver something that works and that stays better than whatever they're delivering on the general purpose tool. And the same with vibe coding, it's kind of like with all this stuff, with AI, it becomes very easy to generate a prototype. And that's the promise and the harm of it is it's like, this obviously should be able to work. I've done like 10 minutes of work and I'm 80% of the way to the finish line. The problem is that kind of like multiplying that 10 minutes times 1,000-fold does not get you 1,000 times further along the pathway. It's kind of like, actually, there's a lot more work that has to go from 80 to 90 to 99% of what you have envisioned. And so you end up with a lot of people spinning up projects and being like, oh, this is a great idea. And then just, you know, not being able to punch through.
Great ideas are cheap. Execution is hard. Yeah. Nick.
D-
do you want us to go down the railroad track or do you want to go to the energy track?
Let's do energy. Let me share.
All right. Nick's going to share a chart here showing that OpenAI is going to need more power than India currently uses in the next, what's the time frame here? 5 years or 10 years? I think it went out to
2033. And I also don't have sharing permission enabled on Riverside, so we'll have to embed the chart. So everyone is currently seeing it. Forget I even said anything. The only person that hasn't seen it is Brett. So he's blind, but I'm going to send it to him on Teams so that we're all looking at the same image so we can talk to it.
I'm very skeptical of this
all right.
headline. I'm going to say it's even wrong.
Okay. Wrong. Wow. Yeah. Preemptive. This is solid reporting.
There's a thing they want 250 gigawatts by 2033. And that India's at 223 gigawatts currently.
You're saying OpenAI, this deal that we've just been arguing about was for 10 gigawatts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if 10 gigawatts equals $500 billion in spend, I don't think that OpenAI's plans incorporate a need for, you know, $5 trillion alone in data center capex. So that, to me, the math doesn't square, but maybe I'm just misunderstanding how people are reporting their demands.
All right, Nick, bring in garbage chart to a knife fight.
There's Sam Altman posted in Slack that their goal is to have 250 gigawatts of compute by 2033. And so the question is, when you compare that to the energy capacity of certain countries, you know, how do you square one, the build out you mentioned, the capital required to get the 250 gigawatts. So you have a constraint on capital and then a constraint on actual energy production.
Well, on the energy side, so this is the energy side from it's possible to build, right? It's like, we know that if you look at China, they're building a tremendous amount of energy. And it's like, according to our forecasts, what they did last year is more than what the US would need in our 2030 incremental energy for data center build out. And so it's really a choice. And it's like, if we want to do this, then we can do it, but we need to commit to it and plan to it. And then it's like the other thing with energy that I feel like so many people often get wrong is no one's building energy unless it's worth it, right? So it's like the way all of this capacity gets built, it is because people think it is worth it. And it's like OpenAI is working and monetizing, and people are saying, yes, it is worth it to pay $200 for $2,000 worth of productivity. And so then they keep expanding. But it's like this, there's no such thing as like, quote, a waste of energy. In my opinion, it's like, if people are using it and paying for it, then it's inherently not wasteful.
Yeah. And I mean, also, I don't know, with energy stuff, there's always this stuff, like, it's kind of like, if India has like a poorly utilized fleet, and then you say, well, this is how much India is using, but it's a function of kind of like inefficiencies in their economy. I just don't know if the, you know, comparison is satisfying or relevant, as in, like, compared to what India, you know, will be using in terms of actual power in 2033, or compared to China. China has like 1.2 or 1200 gigawatts of coal capacity alone, and like Sam says, they're throwing in coal, they're throwing in nuclear. I think that you will end up with, as long as these things are ROI positive, you will dump money into them, and you will dump money into them happily. And I think something people misunderstand is, if you have a lot of data center demand for electric power, that will lower electric power prices for everybody else in the economy, which is, I think, like the big risk here is people are going to be like, you're using our energy to power data centers when it could be used to, I mean, in Europe, power air conditioners, which they really should be doing. It's like really dumb, but like could be used to, I don't know, like, you know,
it's like feed a starving kid. It's power. Like, well, but no one's paying to feed a starving kid because there's not ROI on it.
Right.
Right.
It's like, because data centers will require baseload capacity because they run 24/7, it means you can run more of the grid on baseload power, which is less costly per kilowatt hour. And if they're very, very power consumptive, that'll be net better for everybody because it means they will be soaking up all this use, and then additional electricity will be able to kind of like spill off it much less expensively. And so you should be advocating for data centers in your community because it'll lower your power bill over time.
Even though
like this chart. We don't like the comparison to, you know, the
it's sensationalized. It's sensational, but it's not informative.
I also don't know, as in I said, at some point we're gonna get over our skis. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know if 2033 is really a forecastable time horizon or a you know, as a futurist, I feel like 2030
it's gotta be five or 10.
No, I just think it's gonna be hard to operating under the assumption that you're still getting ROI on this stuff. Yes, I'm not sure that it'll all accrue to OpenAI at that point, because I think at some point the language space and kind of like this planning space will get saturated, and kind of part of my confidence is, and to do like robots and genomics and stuff, you'll need a whole nother build out and a whole nother set of tools that will require a lot more GPUs. I just don't know if that's going to be on OpenAI's and partners' balance sheets necessarily. But I do think we'll build it. And I think that energy use to data centers is going to become, yes, monumentally large. Now, comparing to random country, that's kind of like, you know, I'm not sure how useful that is.
I mean, it's the second most populous country.
Yeah, you know,
as in, I think the reason that this chart struck me, and again, you two have done the work on energy, is I see, you know, and this is the reason the chart is up here, is it's an internal message. I don't know how the reporter got it, but on Slack from Sam Altman saying that, you know, their long term, their bull case hope is to have 250 gigawatts deployed. And so when you do compare that to even the US at 488 gigawatts, to me, I read this as, yeah, that should be a bull case, because, you know, just to be able to deploy that cap or that amount of energy will take an enormous amount of capital and labor, considering this is just one of the companies in the market, right? You have Gemini, you have Meta, you have Grok. So you're talking about maybe four or five companies that are hoping to have this amount of energy.
But I don't think
just wait, can I just stop here for a second? Because like even the unfair limiting of the comparison to electricity seems totally wrong and backwards to me. As in, like, it's more fair to compare to primary energy consumption generally, of which, you know, you're taking primary energy, you're converting some of it into electricity. It's actually an efficient way to do it. But over time, like, the entire economy should be shifted in that direction.
Electric,
like, vehicles need to go on electric rather than just burning oil. You know, industrial processes should go electric. We should all be on induction stoves. You know, you should be doing water heating electric. So, and electricity is on the order of like a quarter of primary energy. So there's a big shift that's going to happen, and data centers are going to be a part of this. Like, you wouldn't run a computer on a steam turbine, nor should you, by like burning kerosene inside the computer to like make it spin. So I think we're just going to like, there'll be a big build out of this stuff. Yes. And I also think kind of Sam saying, hey, this is what we're game planning towards, is not necessarily synchronized with actually their kind of like their own internal forecast for what they would get for revenue and how much they'd be investing. Like, if I think those two don't necessarily triangulate. So he has a kind of, listen, if things keep going this way, if we're able to go from $200 a month to $2,000 a month and able to begin spinning up kind of like these AI agents that are operating on their own, then we're going to need this much. And so therefore, this is like a future we need to plan for, is different from the future that, you know, necessarily will happen, though it could. I think there's a big dispersion in potential outcomes here because of the seemingly unsealing capability of these systems.
Yeah. Well, and, I also think unlike other, I mean, that's not true. Often at technological turning points, politics is more important than you would hope, right? I think this has been true throughout history, and it's true again now, right? It's like there, especially when it comes to building out energy infrastructure, it gets political. And so it's like, you know, the US has messed up in the past with ending nuclear's progress. It seems like we're in the process of correcting that, but we do need to be striving for, you know, the sustainable abundance, which, this is a side political soapbox here, sustainable abundance and abundance, fundamentally different things, I think, in the way they're talked about.
In what way?
In that it's like the abundance, like just abundance, I think, is people trying to split up the existing pie, to like what you said, where it's like, we already have enough. Everyone could have enough if you just turned off your air conditioner from 3 to 5, right? Then we all have enough. We have plenty, versus sustainable abundance, which I think of as a growing pie. And it's like a way that continues to create more abundance.
I think the word abundance implies that
I know, I'm just saying from a political thinking standpoint, I think some people perceive that we are already at a point of abundance, but people are wasting, right? It's like, you're wasting it. We would be abundant if only Brett would stop plugging in his air conditioner, as opposed to a sustainable abundant world, which is like, you can't use enough, because there's always too much. So I think that is existing in the
I think the former, and this is something that also drives me crazy, but it's like the air conditioner example in Europe. It's one, it's like they're killing people. They're killing, I think it's 100,000 plus people by not using air conditioning. Like, it's really cruel. Like, and generally that set of ideas is kind of like, I feel comfortable where I'm at in my life, and therefore I'm going to try to pull up the ladder behind me and just like crystallize things here. It's like, I'm good. Nobody else gets to advance. It's comfortable for me here. And I think that's like the underlying, it's a very, whoever is making the policy centric point of view rather than like a human centric point of view. And so I think that it allies with ostensible humanitarians, I think, is really backwards and wrong. Actually, it's like so myopic. And yes, and I agree, like, as in, it would be amazing if OpenAI, if like was building 240 gigawatts of power by 2033, if they had that, that would be an amazing future. I think that would be, we should want to be using more energy and harnessing more of the energy of the sun and the atom to like make, yeah, things abundant. So I can have like a robot that's, you know, doing the dishes for me instead of me having to, and, you know, have a more well-organized life and not potentially die in a car accident, and, you know, have somebody doing my calendar except me because I'm bad at it. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that I'd love to not have to worry about or die from that this could enable.
That's right. All right, Brett, we're going to postpone your railroad analogy. We're going to railroad your railroad analogy and move on to the next topic here, because we've already gone down several varying paths here. But the ARC Institute, you claimed, quote, revolutionized biology. Is that fair?
I think biology is undergoing a revolution, and the ARC Institute is contributing to that in a profound way. And this is, again, on the uses of AI, kind of, AI allows us to take very complex data and interpret it, and we have these tools in biology where we're surfacing lots more data than we were before. So now you have tools that allow you to think about that data that you're reading, and you have other tools that allow you to take those insights and actually write and change the underlying biology. And so the ARC Institute is funded by Patrick Collison, who's co-founder of Stripe, along with a number of universities. We're so early in biology space. Like, it's just, you know, there are fundamental advances happening that kind of will change our way in which we can do health in the world. These are some examples. So last week they put out three papers. One, they'd kind of like already pre-printed it, but it got officially published. And then a couple of like demonstrations of capability. One is like a new gene editing technique that can take much bigger chunks of DNA and insert it into the genome. So this is like a CRISPR gene editing type advance. CRISPR was invented a decade ago or a little more. This is probably where CRISPR was a decade ago. It's called bridge editing. Another is to synthesize actually an entire genome of an organism that can create things that could, called bacteriophages, that can go and kill antibiotic resistant bacteria. And so they used kind of the same advances we're using in language models to basically feed in genomic material, and you can like generate synthetic kind of additional genomic material, and then you can actually synthesize it and create the organism. So then the third was just a way to predict and find structures that can plug into kind of antigen. So there's antibody therapy is a way to harness your immune system to attack disease. It's used in cancer. And there's lots of companies that are like, hey, if we use AI to do this, we can do it more efficiently. And that could mean that these large molecule drugs, which are very precise and very good, could become much less expensive to develop. And so they're open sourcing a way to find those antibody structures. And so it should just accelerate everybody's attempts to do this. There are also, you know, publicly traded companies that have probably a better version of this process. It's just closed and proprietary. So it just should up-level everybody and accelerate our ability to deliver precise treatments. And so at the end, after we've spent all this money to generate kind of like knowledge worker productivity advances, like where all of the money is going to go is into trying to live forever. That in sustainable abundance, you don't end up in sustainable abundance because we're all going to be like, well, this is a nice spot to be. Now I want to live forever. And so I think that's what it'll soak up all of the capital, as in this is the ultimate, you know, sinkhole for capital is to try to understand biology, which is so complex and nasty. And so this kind of like across the space, but Arc Institute doing some great work is kind of like laying the foundation for how kind of we'll use that capital for good.
I think that's the biggest point, right? It's just like the infinite money hole, because it's like, right, it's like the economy. We haven't updated this work, I feel like, in a long time, or maybe we're just pulling it from somewhere, right? Where it's like the life year is worth $100,000 roughly. But yep. That's true on a general population basis, not on an individual billionaire basis, where I'm sure they would spend $100 million,
a lot more,
right? So I do think there's something pretty profound about the efforts that will go into that as we approach abundance.
Yeah, and even if there's a hard cap on how long you can live, which I think there's a fair amount of evidence that getting past 120 is going to be very hard, like you would rather live to 120 and you would rather live healthily to 120. Like you want to be able to, you know, run triathlons at like 110 rather than just kind of like hobble around. And so if you do the math, if you just take the US population and take that $100,000 per life year, if you could actually give everybody full quality life years all the way to 120 and then they die, that's worth, I think it's $1.6 quadrillion if everybody were willing to pay, if we could, you know. And so
makes qualms about $10 trillion.
Yeah, this is
forget trillions.
Yeah. This is the market that will be the end state of all capital, I think, is kind of like now we want to extend our biological lives.
But that's forecasting out to 2035, which is much easier than 2033.
No, that's, I'm not affixing a number on when that's going to happen. And I'm just indicating that, you know, if you imagine that, hey, we can do 1% of that and only 1% of the population is willing to pay, has the money to do it, you're still in the tens of billions dollar market in the longevity space. So I think that there's And you can see it, you know, these people are investing in things that seem like they're not going to work at all. But you want people to do that because you want to like spread a lot of money out of the, across these kind of like low probability, but high impact potential outcomes so that you can discover what's really going on.
All right. That was a good, good discussion. Touched on a lot of things. We'll see everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.